Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 113 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And in this episode, I get a chance to talk to JD from Primitive Pits. It's another in my series on Meet the Pit Builders. I've been intrigued for a while to talk to him. When I interviewed Brendan Lamb from Smiley's Barbecue, he mentioned that he has a Primitive Pit and mentioned I should talk to him, and I had been wanting to talk to him. And you're going to really love it. It's so interesting. He's got a million stories. He's been deep in the world of barbecue cooking wise for his entire life, but he had a career outside of barbecue in the music and sound business. I'll let him explain, because he'll explain in the interview, but that was always in the back of his mind, to barbecue, to open a barbecue restaurant, which he did. And then from there it turned into the pit rental business and then the pit business. So we get all into pits and design and who he's hired on and brought on to figure out the mechanics of the pits. This is very cerebral and interesting, and I think you're gonna really love it. It's a great interview. Primitive Pits is out of Georgia, and you can go to primitivepits.com, check out everything that they have. They have pricing on their website, which is interesting. They also have pit rentals, and they have pricing and stuff. So check it out. Thanks, JD, for taking the time. And I am proud to have the Smoke Sheet as my sponsor for the podcast. I've been on board with the Smoke Sheet since day one. It's a weekly email newsletter that it's super easy to sign up for. Just go to barbecuenewsletter.com. That's bbqnewsletter.com. First and last name. Email address, boom, you get it once a week, and you will check it out every time it comes in. And you'll read it, and you'll see a bunch of stuff that you didn't know. I read it each week, and I'm surprised that I missed out on specific news. And the cool thing about it, too, is it has a lot of event listings, and there are events ahead of time, so that way you can sign up for these events and schedule a trip to go out to these specific barbecue events. It's that part alone is really cool, but there's barbecue news about openings, about closings, about different things within the barbecue business. There's also a recipe of the week that is a really good recipe. It's one hand curated by Ryan Cooper, Barbecue Tourist, and Sean Ludwig, NYC Barbecue, who run the Smoke Sheet. They choose a specific recipe that'll be a good one each week. And when you go to their website at bbqnewsletter.com, you can see the archives and see all the back ones too. But they also have links to great podcasts and YouTube stuff. And it's just, seriously, it's chock full of information. And I wouldn't stand behind it if I didn't really like it. So I'm super excited that we're doing this partnership. Again, it's bbqnewsletter.com, the Smoke Sheet, barbecue news worth consuming. And if you're digging these, please subscribe. That way you don't miss out on any of them. Also, I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with tons more content, links to all my podcasts, all the YouTube stuff, as well as barbecue joint tours, butcher shop tours, lots of great stuff. But enjoy this.
Well, I don't ever really have a lot of time to do podcasts and all that, because I don't commute very far. I live a mile and a half from the shop, but I've gotten to where we're doing so much now podcasting. Like, I listened to your Pat Martin, because I went into his restaurant like right when he opened.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the one in Nolensville, like, I want to say
13.
Oh, no, like early. Nine or 10. The first one. Yeah. Me and my wife went and scouted it out. I'll never forget this. And 30 minutes out, and I got out of the car, and the very first thing I did was got out of the truck, went around the back, and I met Pat in the pit house. He probably don't remember this. I just went in there. I said, I just want to make sure you're using wood. He goes, what the hell else you think I'd be using?
Isn't it funny, like, listening to Pat, like, on that interview, and if you watch it, it's kind of cool, because, like, I like it because the background gets darker, because he's driving during dusk, but everything coming out of his mouth is Pat Martin. It's just how he is.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know so much of what I know about barbecue is sectionalized, and Pat Martin's talking about cooking half pigs with Sam Jones, and I'm like, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that was even for events.
I mean, I was like, what? Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of little, like, and it's, yeah, it was, everything was like so dead honest and like just matter of fact.
He is. I called his store one time to get him involved in an event 3 or 4 years ago, and he happened to answer. Now, I went to his store because I had a studio next door, the one on Belmont campus, nearly every week, usually twice, three times a week. And, I didn't ever really see him at that Belmont store. It was a really kind of a midtown store, and I think he worked the other places. He's building all these other stores.
Yeah.
But I called him one time, and I got him on the phone, and I called the other store. And it was like 10 to 11. I'll never forget the time because it was being a restaurant guy. I know it can be itchy after 11 till 2.
Of course.
I call ahead and say, Pat, you got a second? I want to talk to you about being an event. He goes, dude, I got people lined up right now for barbecue. The last thing I care about is an event. Click. He didn't know who I was, and I get it, but, you know, that's Pat Martin.
And that's funny, though, that he actually is the guy that answered the phone. I think that's awesome. That's
I know. And I knew it was him because, you know, I know who he is, but he's a nice, great guy.
Oh, yeah. That's so great. Like, imagine, like, that's what I would love to film someday is him and Sam Jones and Wayne Mueller and I forget the other guy. Just have them all in the same room talking, just hanging out. Like, it would be such an interesting, just be a fly on the wall for that situation.
Yeah. There's a common bond, and I've asked Wayne, and I don't know the other guys to ask him, but Wayne tells me that there's a common bond. Wayne says, well, there's a guy from New York who doesn't, you know, Brooklyn.
Durney? Billy Durney?
Billy Durney. He goes, and then there's a hillbilly from North Carolina. And he goes, there's me. And then there's, you know, some other guys. He goes, we get together and we have something that's common that none of us can explain, but there's a brotherhood. And
that's what it is. It's Billy, Pat, Sam, and Wayne. That's a group, yeah.
And it's not a fraternity. It's more of like, I think they're – Pat's dad died early. Wayne's dad died. I think there's some connectivity with the fact that those guys just kind of grew up in that home that, mm-hmm. like, all of us kind of in that age did.
Yeah. And they're all kind of around the same age. I think Sam maybe is the youngest.
Sam is. I don't know how old Sam is. I don't know Sam. I've been in the same room as him and Billy Durney once or twice, but I'm kind of like a new guy to the barbecue party in some circles. But we were cooking a long time before Pat was open. Matter of fact, there used to be a barbecue place in Franklin, and Franklin's south of Nashville, and it's about 30 minutes south, and it wasn't very good. And it was Texas barbecue. And I felt like at the time, this is probably late 90s, that I was the only guy in town that knew that wasn't great Texas barbecue. But then I started meeting these artists, you know, in the late 90s, we got this big influx of Texas artists, east side of Texas, a lot of them, but we did get some central Texas guys. And it was really good to kind of meet people and like be in the studio recording a guy and go, hey, you like Texas barbecue? He's like, dude, I'm from Texas. I'm like, well, then you're not going to have very fun here in Nashville. He's like, yeah, we'll go find it. And when we'd find it, we were all like, you know, hey, this is a good spot. Check this guy out. But they were all like trailers and doing it twice a week. And you couldn't find, you know, brisket was kind of like they didn't want to cook brisket to offend the Tennesseans. And so it was a real.
That was early days. That's such an interesting
early
time.
Days. Yeah. I mean, there was like Judge is the name of the place. I would never say it. But it's a Brentwood kind of a staple. But go in there and the Texas flag's flying. But God, don't go in there and judge the Texas barbecue because it is Jack's barbecue in Nashville is the only thing that you in the early 90s you could say, well, they were there once.
Yeah.
But he had two stores downtown, blew up. So
is that the one with the big big neon?
The big sign going up?
That's
that
a cool
used to be
sign.
Really. That was really good brisket. They did the clod
shoulder. Oh, like Lockhart's.
Yeah. So they had a really cool thing going. But then Jack, you know, he's hanging with Garth Brooks and all these guys and, you know, never at the store. And it kind of, it's still decent.
People probably still go. It's just.
Oh yeah. Downtown Nashville is like, we live downtown. We lived in Midtown and being a country boy and a farmer, I lived down there for proximity from our job. And, you know, we would go down there sometimes like, we knew when the tours were not going to be, you know, when the festival schedules are as far as Country Fest and all that, CMA. But then, you know, like the Tyson Chickens having an 8,000 people conference coming at Century 21, the Dentist Association, you know, when those are. So you're like, okay, this is a Tuesday night. We can go get Jack's.
Yeah.
And that's what our family lived in and died by the whole going down there to eat Jack's only when we knew that, you know, it wasn't horrible. It's just, it used to be pretty decent.
I have a feeling I might spend, like, I might live a couple years, 2, 3, 5 years in Nashville for some reason. I feel like.
You know what's crazy? It's very Los Angeles. And it's part of the reason I moved out is because I needed a new scenery. I love the old boy school network, which, believe it or not, a lot of them came from LA. It's just now a bunch of guys came into town that really don't have a job in the music industry. They're not in the industries. And it's a cool scene to hang out. The bar scene is ridiculous. It's fun. The restaurant scene has gone way up. Every one of my close friends from Los Angeles moved to Nashville, and they're like, it's too eerily close to Nashville.
Okay. That's it. Thanks. Hey, that was a tip. You gave me a tip.
The traffic is not bad. The restaurant's better in LA.
And actually our food scene is growing, which you think it would have been there already, but it's blowing up the last 5-6 years.
Hey, is there a place in LA still open called Grace?
I know I've gone there. That's a good question. No one's asked me about that in a long time.
I went to high school with the girl who started that, and we were great friends. She said, oh, she's a freaking phenomenal person.
Amy Knoll. Great chef. Amazing chef.
I would go there. I live next door to Frank DeLeo. He's Michael Jackson's manager all of his
career.
That's
why I know that name. Okay.
And Frank would stay at the Beverly Hills Hilton, and every time I was out there, he'd invite me out. And he's passed away. God rest his soul. But man, he took me to the same three Italian restaurants every time I went out there. And I couldn't get – it was like now with social media, I couldn't sneak out there. I'd tell my wife, I'm going to L.A. If I don't call Frank, he'll be really upset. But then the Italian restaurants we'd go to, literally you got there at 6 and you left at 10:30 p.m.
Which hotel? Do you remember any of the places?
I don't remember any of them. Okay. He took me to the places in Nashville. I don't remember. There's two of them.
Like old school.
One over in Bellevue, and I can't remember. I can see the building, but and then in L.A., one not too far down from the hotel.
Did you go to Musso and Frank's?
That might have been it. That's a real old school,
really cool
Vegas
old bar.
Dive.
Yeah, cool old bar, and yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But
let's rewind a little bit back to your beginning. So how did you get? Let's talk about how you got your start. You started in the music business, right?
Yeah, I spent from late 80s until 2013 was my official walk-away time from the music business. And it was just a really part of my genetic behavior is that I don't do anything for money. I do everything for passion. I've gone down some bad roads. But I'll never forget having the conversation with my wife. I said, you know what? I want to get into a barbecue restaurant. I want to own a restaurant. And her first words out of her mouth was like, you know, oh, that sounds really cool. And I was, that's bait.
Yeah, and so I was kind of. She should know better, right?
Yeah, I mean, I really wanted her to fight it because I had a good sales pitch, but that's how I got into it. But I really got into it with my dad. Growing up as a kid, I grew up in an exceptional environment for cooking with live fire. Oh. And my dad died in 05, but he taught our kids around a campground about cooking primitive. And then carried that into our backyard, and we started playing with all these different devices to cook barbecue. And being that we were up in East Tennessee, that's where I was from. I was born in Knoxville and raised up kind of like in the Cherokee Mountains or Smoky Mountains. And we were playing around with, you know, beef and chicken, some pork. And then when I got into high school, I just started, you know, hanging out with some guys that I played basketball with, and one of my great friends on the team, Brendan, invited me over to his parents' house, and his dad was cooking a whole hog, and I got bit that night.
Did he build his own cinder block
pit? He built a cinder block pit out behind their house. Oh, and
so cool.
He cooked up, you know, this is in 87 or 86, and I just went there, and I was like, man, if I don't do anything in my life, I'm going to learn how to do this. So I did. I cooked a bunch of hogs over the course of 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And then in 1993, in July, I'll never forget this, one of my best friends, a guy named Joe Reed, introduced me to his uncle, and his uncle ran a cattle ranch for the Rollins family, which is they're involved in Orkin Exterminator and Rollins truck line and Chaparral boats and all that. And we go to John's, and he cooks a brisket and smokes a brisket. And, you know, I just took a bite of it and lost my mind again. So here I am in like, you know, a less than 10 year period. I'm like, man, this barbecue stuff is just spot on. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I had trouble sleeping at night, and this is true, for weeks without thinking, man, how do I get that brisket? And he wrapped it in foil. There was a lot of things. And we just had one four or five years ago. I still talk to him all the time, 30 years later or whatever. Okay. But so that's how I got into it. I love barbecue. Now the fabrication part was just a messing around and a
scientific
approach.
So were you fabricating we'll jump into primitive pits and get really into that, because I want to talk a lot too, because I know we could probably talk for 3 hours in general. We've done we've had our conversations just on the phone.
Right.
But when we do talk about Primitive, I want to talk about what you guys offer too, because I think it's important
right.
that people can get their heads around that portion. But were you fabricating pits at that time?
No. Okay. I was an audio engineer, and I strictly was committed. I loved, still do, love the profession. I started in 1994. I took an old refrigerator, and really with the guidance of an older guy who was a dog trainer, we tore apart this refrigerator, and he had an idea to pull the compressor apart. And then, you know, I was on the phone with my dad, and then we finally started putting together what we thought would be a smoker. But I really approach it like audio with audio signal. You got a vocal going into a microphone, and it goes into a system, and then it ends up at the end user, whether it's on YouTube and that's how I looked at smoking. So I kept telling Freddie, I was like, hey, this is not going to work. This is not going to work. Well, ended up we had the first version in 1994 of an old Frigidaire smoker. And I wish I still had that thing today because
yeah, no, I was going to ask you, no,
it's probably still parked where we left it, but there's definitely
some
memorable moments. We actually, that was a period of my life. We were really into live games. So the idea of that smoker with the coals underneath, we'd put a tray of apple juice and some chips in there, maybe like mesquite chips or apple chips or whatever. And then on the bottom racks, we'd put heavier meat. So we'd have, we had bigger pieces of backstrap, and then we'd have like quail and dove on the top. And then we'd go all up. We even cooked, smoked rattlesnake, which didn't turn out at all good. Now rattlesnake's great, but we cooked a lot of stuff. And I think that smokers is today on a ranch in Florida called Blue Cypress Ranch. I'm pretty sure down in Okeechobee or Yeehaw Junction. But
you could do like a journey there, a quest on your YouTube channel.
Well, in 2009, I went down there. I've got a video, and I'm going to put it on the YouTube channel of us building that smoker.
Okay.
Because I've been videoing everything that is to me important or memorable.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Since the 90s, so I've got a video of that particular smoker and the build and all that. But that's how I really started thinking about it. And it's a thought of, can you do it better and more efficient? And then I think Aaron Franklin is the guy that a lot of people can point to that, he hit the nail on the head for me because it's just simple. You don't need a lot. You need to be able to burn even. You need to put enough smoke on it. And then, when you've got the smoke that you want, then start going with drier wood. And you don't need this vessel with 8,000 knobs and electronic.
You kind of feel like, I was thinking one sleepless night one time, I was thinking there was like before Aaron and after Aaron. And when it comes to Texas style barbecue, like it's kind of, there's that period that was before him, and then after, things have completely changed.
Well, the first bite of Aaron Franklin's barbecue to me reminded me of eating John Buchanan's brisket. And I'll compare those two guys neck and neck because in my mind, they both delivered this wow moment that we're, but Aaron, I had already gotten the hype buzz, early on. I'd go down there for South by Southwest. I'd already gotten that.
So you went to his trailer, probably.
No, restaurant. Oh. I didn't go to the trailer.
Oh, okay.
So, but I'd already, the buzz had already happened, it was several years before I actually. But then we've gone back down there, and my wife and my kids, and I've taken people down there, and Aaron's still slaying it, but there's some really good. The great thing about what Aaron did is there's so much. You can throw a rock, five rocks in his neighborhood and hit great barbecue.
Well, that's what I kind of feel like the after Aaron. It's like that's what he's brought. It's this great barbecue. Yeah.
What I'm really into as far as my day job at Primitive Pits is that leaving the state of Texas and landing in suburban cities and, all over Kentucky and Chicago and Charleston, John Lewis, I don't know how to describe it, but it's that Central Texas barbecue has left it. And it's kind of like what Memphis Ribs did. It left and became chain restaurants and spread all throughout the country. So I guess it's just, it makes sense.
So as you were doing your career path doing engineering, you said you were an audio engineer?
Yeah, I was a broadcast and recording engineer. So my thing, early on, I worked for these guys that, that really kind of threw me in that they did huge rehearsal sound check in Nashville, which is owned by Glenn Frey and a guy named Bob Thompson at the time, Norton, their tour manager. It was a rehearsal facility. So, I got into live recording by everybody who came in to rehearse. I mean, all the big acts on the world, the world came in to record. I just felt like being a studio engineer bored me, and I got into live recording because, you know, at that time you're making VHS, you're making live albums, and that translated in that, you know, or moved over to DVDs. And then when the DVDs went away, that was kind of our business model. And we went into internet broadcast and did, you know, we did live television, the Grammy, CMA Awards. You know, we did these major award shows and major television music events. But I just started realizing that, you know, it was not what I started in, and the passion was kind of, you know, wasn't there. So,
and how did that, like, I know you said that your wife gave you the quote unquote approval,
yeah, she,
but
she,
what, but how did you from there actually find a space and do all that for a restaurant?
Well, I started out like a lot of people doing food truck, and I did my homework, and we put people in business every day. I send a smoker out the door a couple times a week with somebody that's got a vision, and maybe their model's not tight. But I went out there with a food truck and started on a Saturday in Peachtree City, Georgia, at a farmer's market. And honestly, the very first time we showed up, we had no idea. We had a nice decked out truck, and it was just a great looking thing. And we had no idea what we were going to end up with. And by the third or fourth week, we had a line, we had success. And then it was a blur, Kevin. Building the store. Oh. Well, building the store.
Gotcha.
And this is just for people who want to get into this business. And then 3 years later, we sold the store because it just wasn't, something that our time management skills were off, and we were super successful, but at the same time, that was something that really didn't fit us for our time. It was kids.
And it was a large store, right? From what I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. It's even larger. I think it's 15,000 square foot, and it's really more of a beef. It's a beef. They do burgers, and it's kind of more just turned into, it's successful. It's more of a family restaurant, but I had a butcher shop. Was raising cows, and I really had a lot on my plate. I mean, we had a huge operation, and I love raising cows, but it was a challenge. So that's kind of how
Do you find that you dream big? Is that what happens?
Yeah, I dream really big, and yeah. I'll tell you that's
I do
like
that same thing.
I have that's a negative, and I listened to a guy in the music business 2 years ago. Or 3 years ago to conference, and he said you got to make a small to do list and a big to do not do list.
Oh, that's interesting.
And Michael Rapino, and I was like, you know what? That's what I'm going to do. So I've really just been focusing on, you know, staying focused. And Q-Toro's and Primitive Pits is it. We did a rental business for, you know, that's how we went from the restaurant business into the rental business based upon we were feeding Walking Dead and all the Marvel films and name dropping these guys because LA,
which is interesting. And I think, please do that because I think it's relevant. It adds.
LA dumped in our backyard a film industry with this tax incentive in Georgia. So we weren't prepared for it. We heard about it. I'm like, you know, I've got a pretty good idea what's going on in the entertainment business. I had no clue.
There's a Pinewood in Georgia, right? Or
am I Pinewood is probably less than 10 miles from our restaurant.
Okay.
And there's nothing from that Pinewood to our town. So
I don't know if people even know that there's another Pinewood outside of England.
Oh no. Pinewood's where all the Marvel films. Yeah. So I'll tell you what really got us is we opened the store and we had about 7 months before the movie buzz hit. And I'll never forget, I worked for a guy in the music business in the early 80s, a guy named Mike Setrazimus, and he's up there in age, great guy, love him to death still to this day. His son is a producer of Walking Dead. I had been renting this facility called Riverwood Studios, and there was nobody there. It was an old film studio in Georgia. It was kind of where we parked some of our assets and our recording trucks, and I knew the owners, who's an LA guy. And he said, "Hey, you're going to have to leave. We got a possible movie coming in or show." And I chuckled because every time they said that, it never worked out. Well, Walking Dead booted us out. So the funny part about it is I was like, you know, bummed because we had to move all of our stuff. We moved it back to Nashville, and we ended up moving into a warehouse up in Hendersonville. And then so I'm opening the restaurant. I got 7 months after the restaurant's open. I get a phone call one day, and so he says, "Hey, call this guy. He's got a television show. They want you to do a feeding of, you know, 100 people, like late at night, like 11 o'clock. And I'm like, okay. And we did it. It was Walking Dead. We started feeding them every week. And we built a great relationship with them. Of course, the show blew up. That was, so the show came out in 2009. This is like, they're already there.
Yeah, yeah.
This is 13. The restaurant didn't open until 13. And then, we got it. All of a sudden, here comes Marvel. And then the great thing is if you're in a big city, your restaurant, and then you got Paul Rudd and Scarlett Johansson and Michael Douglas, you better get your you know what together, and you better make sure that you got it together. And we didn't always, because of no restaurant experience, I didn't always say that we were prepared for the volume and just the chaos that ensued. But
now, what kind of what kind of rental business were you renting pits to people?
When I left the music business, I kept a good part of the event entertainment in my blood, and I started producing events, concerts with the restaurant, and we would do stuff like we did Luke Bryan's farm tour as a restaurant. I did Bonnaroo. Wow. We did another couple festivals. I can't remember the names of them, like Tomorrow World and all these big festivals. We would go in and cook food, and we had to learn how to feed 6,000 people in a day. So when I left there, I kind of said, well, we can put together stage, you know, concerts, sell tickets, all that. Oh, and that's okay, what we did.
Okay.
So we'd do it in our, parking lot. We would do it, you know, down the street at parks. We did it in other cities. We did it Clemson, South Carolina. And, you know, we knew how to serve food, but we carried around these pits, 500 gallons and a couple thousand. And, you know, probably within 2 months, a couple years after we got going, we realized we didn't start by a decision that we proactively said, let's start a rental business. It started, we just joking a couple years later, like, hey, we started this because somebody asked us.
Wow.
And that's exactly how we started building Primitive Pits to sell.
Okay.
A guy came and said, hey, I want to buy that. And we were like, no, I was like, okay, let's do it. And he's in Marietta, Georgia, and he bought our first for sale pit that really wasn't for sale. But
was it a 500 or a 1,000?
It's a 500. And I just touched base with him for the first time last week. And he had no idea that he's still at the 500. And, you know, it, 4 or 5 years later, here we are. You know, we push a pretty good amount of pits out for just a little small pit maker in Georgia.
Did you bring on someone for the engineering aspect, or did you?
No, I had already been into this style of smoker, just not, you know, Yoder, had really built a good smoker that, you know, kind of caught my eye early on. I think they came out in 07. Mm-hmm. So I was on top of that, and I'd seen all these kind of what I call horizontal offsets. And I was in tune with that based upon my experience with the horizontal smoker. And I knew that you could get a really good cook out of a horizontal. I just had a lot of problems with hot spots. And I fought hot spots. Now I'm super confident. I know exactly what's going on with that.
Yeah.
We can get into some of that later with CFD. But I just started tinkering. So, and I didn't get Aaron Franklin's book till last, you know, till this like 4 months ago.
Really?
I punched myself like Jim Carrey in the movie in the bathroom scene where he punches himself. I did that because I'm like, oh my gosh, no wonder everybody comes to us and says, build this, build that. It's a baffle like Franklin's.
Because it's all there.
I got the Aaron book, and my wife bought it for me. I don't know if she bought it for me as a joke or as a present, but I felt like it was somewhat of like, you know, I don't need it. But then I opened the book and I started reading it, and in the sections that I thought could, you know, provide me a quick cliff notes. And I'm like going, wow, there's a lot of information. And I was punching myself going, what in the world? You know, but a lot of what I do is, and this is an annoying part of most males, but we don't read the directions. We go out and tinker. And I am a tinker to the word go. I drive everybody nuts in the shop, but I'm really always trying to figure out, is this the best platform, the best unit, the best equipment? Is this at the best? Not always efficient, because sometimes efficient can degrade the cook. I'm not a big pellet fan, electric smoker, all these other assist things. I have no interest in it. And that's, I like to be the authentic version of, you know, in touch with our 2-million-year-old DNA type cooking. And that's when I say, you know, I'm tweaking with how, and it's confusing because, you know, how we can use this technology up to a certain mm-hmm. point to make this barbecue really good. And to me, that's taken over my whole, I go to bed every single night, fall asleep thinking about it, and I wake up in the morning.
So that, so when did that guy get his 500? When was that? That was?
He, 15. Okay. I don't remember if it's spring, but spring of 15 is when we really started to, or I think it was 15. Yeah, may have been 15, but it's called Freckled and Blue in Marietta. So whenever they started, might have been late 15.
Was that the germ of the idea?
Yeah.
I'm going to start a company?
Not, when that smoker, I delivered that smoker and set it up, and he had a pretty good knowledge of it. But one of the things that we found in the rental business is we would deliver smokers for rentals, and these people would be like, what do you do? What kind of wood? I saw a guy loading up pine in his truck. You know, I'm like, no, that's not going to work. And so we went out and approached the building, the smokers for public, just like we did for that rental situation. I didn't want to be silly and go out there and say, okay, we're going to start building smokers that day. But it was a couple weeks later, you know, started formulating the plan and really wanted to have something that we could reduplicate, and finding the liquid propane tanks. You know, now we've got three really good suppliers, and, you know, they touch a lot of thousands of tanks a week. So we have some options, but, you know, sorry guys, there's no green tanks. I look for them every day, but that's kind of how that started.
Are you saying that sorry to the guys like in LA that want the green tanks?
No, everybody. I mean, I get a call. I've had three calls today. Hey, I want a tank. You know, I want a smoker, but you know, can you find green? Or
that's so funny.
I've got one client that wants a pink one, and you know, which is an original red. But all these tanks, the history of them is they were buried underground, and they needed to be identifiable for people digging.
Okay.
And there's been changes in laws, and you know, it's hard to find some of these patinas people want. But anyway, so we got into building the barbecue smokers, and trust me, it was a really risky move, and my wife wasn't as quite on board with that plan as she was starting the restaurant, but we really love it. We're growing this year. We've got another little something up our sleeves, so to speak, in April, the end of April, 1st of May.
So is that one?
We're really excited about it, and so in May we're going to release some really, I think, pretty big news, and something that's you know, as far as in the barbecue world, it's important to us.
Well, I'd love to I do these 10 minutes with, which are like kind of when people have something new to report. So we'll touch back and we'll do a quick 10 minutes with generally turn out to be 20 minutes.
But 10 minutes, like, the guy, Matt McKinnon, who does 2 Minute Tuesday, and it's like 5 minutes long every time.
Exactly. Yeah. Like if someone actually figured out the time of all my 10 minutes with it.
I saw you doing one. I didn't watch it all, but I saw one just a couple weeks ago. I guess you've been doing it for a while though.
I've done about 7 of them. Yeah. Just because I realize people don't have a long attention span.
Bert. I think it was Bert. 10 minutes with Bert.
No, that's what I want to do.
Okay.
Leonard, maybe?
Leonard? No, I just saw one. I didn't get to watch it.
I did so Matt Horn, Leonard. I've done Scott at Tejas. Whatever. So from that moment, when you came up with the specific, I'm just trying to get around what you were thinking when you actually were able to turn that into a business. Like because a lot of people probably wonder, how do you create a smoker business, a business making pits?
Well, you know what? We get people call us all the time asking us how we build. I mean, literally, we probably take 20 phone calls, 30 phone calls a week, and 20, 30 emails, social media, asking us how do we build it, help us out. We help people out. I'm going to make videos on tutorials and show them exactly how we build these smokers. Because honestly, it goes back to my music business days, and it goes back to my childhood. I've had trouble doing anything to make a living that I just wasn't passionate about. So I started doing this because there was a need, guys that wanted to open barbecue restaurants and wanted to cook like this. And I believed in this Texas style barbecue, Central Texas style barbecue. And two, this unit worked. I cooked on it as a rental unit. So we had a rental company, but I did a lot of cooking, not a ton, but I did a lot. And I'd go to events and I saw the feedback at Denver Downs Farm and Clemson, South Carolina, people lined up and everybody saying, this is the best brisket. And I'm like going, yeah, you know, but the whole business part of this thing was never a decision. I just started fabricating my father-in-law. Me and my father-in-law started building these.
Okay.
And you know, when my dad passed away, it was kind of, well, it wasn't funny. It was one of those things where I was like, if he were alive, he would be right. Yeah, he would be right here with me.
I could see that.
He tinkered with me in this way that, you know, he was a library guy. So he went to the library to get all his information. Now you obviously get it elsewhere. But, you know, thermodynamics is something that a lot of people in barbecue have studied. But I'm so amazed at all these pits out there that there is such a disruption.
Can you talk about that? Because we talked about that offline a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, we just spent this past year with a race team, NASCAR race team, and applying what happens in a smoker is the same thing that happens with draft. And it's called Computational Fluid Dynamics. And Georgia Tech's got a great program, and we hooked up with one of these guys that's on the Penske Racing team. And all of a sudden, I'm starting to see stuff, and I have to answer it for science. Because the old adage, or you know, the way people build pits is a lot of, oh, that looks like it'll do a good job. Mm-hmm. Oh, that looks cool. And we have a motto. It's great barbecue we're after. And if you want to cook Aaron Franklin or Mueller or Snows or those kind of, you know, that kind of brisket, and I highlight those guys, is there is some science that goes into it that can't be denied. Mm-hmm. You can build a smoker, but if it doesn't have the draft and the draw elements without the hot spots, you're not going to get 26 pieces of brisket to come off and people giving you, you know, reviews that mm-hmm. are great. And that's kind of what we did this year, is we spent a lot of money and effort into the computational fluid dynamics. And I've learned so much that I'm changing the throat of our firebox.
Okay.
And
oh yeah, that's only what because, we talked about.
You know, I've designed a throat that it's gone through 40 versions, and we're right now at a version that we believe that when that thing heats up and starts kicking into the chamber, it is completely even, and it is the way that I'd like to see, you know, the cook happen. Now, the current way with the baffle is still really good, but heat starts in the firebox, and what does heat do? It rises, and when it rises, it's going to bounce. And we've created this thing with the help of the guys that, you know, with the CFD, we've been able to create some of these assumptions and take those assumptions and say they're always going to be there. Let me give you a quick example. Yeah. Barbecue assumptions are, you know, more about what is the wood wetness, what is the barometric pressure, what is the moisture of the brisket, what is the size of the brisket or pork butt. And all these assumptions, you know, come into the play.
Yeah.
So what we're doing is taking the thing that we know is going to be close, and that is barometric pressure, air temperature hitting the smokestack, what the fire is going to do. So we're not going to burn real wet wood in there. We're going to burn at least 60% or 50% moisture content wood and under. So we know that you might put a piece that's got 22% in it, and you know, it might be a piece of a log that's thick on one side and thin. All these variables come into play. So what we're trying to do is put a box together. We know that most of the guys at Terry Black's and some of these big barbecue joints are trying to dial into consistency, yeah. consistent wood. So that's what we're doing. And we're trying to do it on a high level, because when we sell a smoker, we want them to buy a second one.
No. So is this information proprietary, like that you're doing?
It is. We spent, I wish I could say, let me divvy up the bill to everybody. And, but I see guys are building smokers and selling them. And I think that the guys look at them and go, that looks cool. And that's got all the bells and whistles and, you know, oh, that looks like it can smoke. But, I could probably put my hand on five guys on this planet, or maybe 10 guys planet, that are building smokers that I know, work.
Makes sense.
And the rest of it is, you know, I've got one smoker manufacturer that I like, and I think they're super, is they, you know, they have a tuning plate. Well, the tuning plate makes it a bottom flow smoker and allows heat to seep up, just, you know, baby steps. And I always felt like, no, you got to let that thing go. And my buddy, Jeff, he was always like, man, I want this thing to be able to go from the firebox, cover the meat. And, you know, I told him, I said, you're going to have a hot spot, but I agree with you. Let's do it. And that's kind of where we started with the CFD. So it's been like a year that we started having these high level talks. So maybe John Lewis and these guys, Aaron Franklin, they probably did this 10 years ago, but we kind of graduated.
You
late.
You want to stay on top of that. You want to be on top of that. So that way
now we're on top of it. Now I feel confident that our smokers, like our 500 and 1000, go out the door and they burn plus or minus 5 degrees all the way across the grate.
That's crazy.
And there's a bunch of fabrication that has to happen, you know, on a zero level balance scale, or as far as being, you know, in where the firebox meets and the smokestack meets, where it has to be really good and level. I mean, you can't stick something 2 degrees off, because it's going to shoot the fire and cause some things goofy to happen there. So we're really precise and hyper detail with that, but we're staying on top of it. As far as it's a liquid propane tank, we cut into it. We're going after thick tanks. You know, I'll go through the yard, and before I make a purchase, sometimes I got to go spend 2 days and stay in a hotel and go walk a yard and find out, reaching up underneath, you know, fighting snakes and all that, and feeling my finger and making sure that that tank is not, you know, like a late 80s, early 90s tank when the steel started to get, you know, a little thinner, because the federal government makes you have these tanks for liquid propane pressurized tested. So there's certain components on them that make them thick. But it's mainly now in the caps is where they're finding where the pressure would release. And, it, you know, so that's kind of one of those things where we really feel like we're on the ball. We're barbecue nuts, and that's where we've got some people that are working with us, and they're my friends, and we feel good about what we're doing now.
So for Primitive, what are your lead times and what do you offer?
Well, one of the things that I really stepped in early on several years ago, I felt like the boom was happening and I felt the boom hitting us. And last year I really felt like we weren't doing our job of getting the smokers out. So I made a commitment, Kevin, that is going to always be a decision based upon the owner and their vision for the company. But I don't want people to wait 8 weeks. That's just for Primitive Pits. Mm. So I put the cap at 8 weeks and said, we've got to go. We were several months backed up. I'd like to be 8 weeks. Okay. And I'd like to be able to bring people in, and we work with them and really nurture, you know, their development, and they have to care. I mean, we don't hire somebody that we don't vet out for 6 months, mm-hmm. and then they get hired. And it's kind of like guys that want to work at the pit room at Franklin's. We've got guys like that that are knocking on our door and go, hey, we want to work here. Mm-hmm. Even if it's for less money, which they're liable to probably get less money coming to work for a pit manufacturer than they are, you know, going out and working in some other fabrication world.
For sure. But so you're looking, so eight weeks, and then what, and then you offer how many different styles? But you could do anything, but what's kind of standard style?
We do the Babe, which I'll let you be the first to know this. We're leaving the 120 gallons behind and we're going to 150 gallons. So every Babe from now on will be 150 gallons, which is going to give you another almost 8 inches of space. Yeah, okay. We just felt like the way we had to build them and cut them in half. And then we build the 250. It's $3,400. It's the best money you can spend for 9 briskets. You can go on there. We've got guys that are today making good money, great money. And they're going to graduate in the 500s. And then the 500 at $5,400, that's what we sold the first one for. Mm-hmm. And we're still holding out on that price. And that's about a 12, 15 briskets in that deal.
Okay.
And we build the 1,000 gallon, which is the commercial 500 and 1,000 are where we really, you know, we can survive doing this. But that holds about 25, 26 briskets. And we build that with a jumbo firebox. We build all of them with a jumbo firebox if you want it, or fully insulated, semi-insulated.
So you could do all, and, like, those are all, and those are all tweaks, like customization.
Yeah, I mean, we got a customer that called us today and said it's minus one. And we got one that yesterday says, hey, it's minus 25. And we've got, you know, old Gold's up there in Indianapolis. I don't know how cold he is. He worked at Aaron's, and he's up there and with Old Gold Barbecue. And I've seen pictures of his 500 up there with snow, you know. So, yeah, and semi-insulated works really well from about the Mason-Dixon line down. And then above, when you get cold weather temperature, you know, I always tell people to look at the almanac. Go look at the average temperature November to March. If you average in the winter, if you're cold temperature, night cooking – is 22, 25 degrees, you might want to put fully insulated.
Yeah, you might want to think about that. Yeah.
I'm a semi-insulated guy. I have my reasons for that based upon cooking and cooking style. And whoops, I threw this log on and I got too hot of a fire. Well, in an insulated box, I'm always warning people, if it's too hot, it's not easy to stop that train.
Yeah. I know. I think that we discussed that too. Yeah, that's something.
Yeah. But then I know guys that, like, man, if you threw in the log and it's your fault, then you shouldn't be cooking. But that's true too. So
now your big news in April, May, that's something that's kind of, I don't want to spill the beans, but I think we kind of.
Man, I do. I really want to, because we worked so hard. So last year we released in July or June, I can't remember. It's a backyard series called Babe and the Bubba, which is a 250, which Bubba's really more of a commercial guy. He's a catering pop-up style guy. But Babe is a true backyard cooker, a 4 brisket cooker. And, you know, I just had been working on something prior to that. I just couldn't get rolled out. I couldn't put my stamp on it and know that it was going to be able to deliver some good barbecue. And at the same time, it looked appealing so mama didn't come out of the back porch and go, what is this tank on my porch?
Yeah.
It just, it really started to come together once we released the Babe. So the big news in May is we have another product coming out, and it's not even going to be under the Primitive Pits umbrella. It's going to be a new company. It's right next door to us. It is a brand new company. It's all separated from Primitive Pits. We're really excited about it. The price point's there. We're going to be the thickest steel in the marketplace for an offset. And we've made some partnerships along the way. We've got a couple guys that have come and helped us.
That'll be exciting.
And we've got a paint job on this a couple that we're going to do a limited edition of that. Oh my goodness. It's Instagram. This is the time of Instagram, Kevin. So it's gotta be.
I think I know who that partnership is with.
Yeah,
I think
we discussed so it's really been,
that's
it's gonna
been
be cool.
So
I'll good.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to talk about it. We'll talk about it.
No,
then, but that's exciting.
We'll bring it back online in May.
That's really cool. So Brendan, doesn't he have a Primitive Pit?
He's got a couple. Yeah. Brendan Lamb is Smiley's Barbecue opens up, I think February 6th.
Yeah.
Super excited about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Excited.
The guys had some challenges as far as you've gotten into some places where the health department, the building's been in, limbo as far as it's a historical district. But he's opening up February 6th. He's in a great spot. I can't wait to go out there. He's got 2 1,000s. And I'll tell you real quick, Kevin, I went to Le Barbecue when he was cooking and I ate barbecue there. And I knew something special was going on because after the third time, I was like, whoa. And that's when I said, that guy can cook.
Mm-hmm.
I found out who was cooking, and I started saying, that guy can cook. And, that's kind of where the relationship, I guess I met his dad, Monty, first, but I'm really excited for him. And honestly, the Dallas and North Fort Worth, all of that North Dallas scene, it is becoming, it's going to put Austin a run for its money in a couple years.
Yeah. It's amazing how things shift and change. And
yeah, Daniel Vaughn ought to be happy. It's closer to his backyard. He's really going to have a good, there's some great stuff there. There's just great barbecue.
Let's talk about tutorials.
Well, so that's a video blog. That's one part of me executing my biggest fear, which is being in front of, being in front of a camera. And I truly mean that. I spent my entire career on the other side of the camera in production with audio, with concerts and whatnot. And I've carried around a camera since the 90s. I've had professional cameras since 1999. And, I've put together these videos and I've been doing stuff. I've got rock bands and concerts and all that, but a lot of barbecue. And it's just something I did and I wanted to revisit. And it took a lot of gumption to do it because I'm not comfortable, but at the same time, I'm comfortable in my own skin. So I feel like I've really grown in barbecue and learned this niche of the smoker and what businesses need. And I love live fire. So I really wanted to put this together and they're hard to make. I'll sometimes get home at 8 o'clock and we'll be back in the shop like before the sun comes up. And so Sunday I want to hang out with my family and I got like an hour, I'm going to go, okay, I'm going to go shoot this real quick. And the last one I shot, no joke, I really wanted to complain to everybody for the vlog. Instead, I did the vlog. It was 25 degrees and the weather said it was going to get to 40. And my app says it's 40. It got 25. And actually during the shooting, you can see the sun is out, the sky is blue. And as the morning comes up, it's like gray and the clouds are jetting by. The wind's beating me up, but I love doing it and I'm going to continue.
Yeah, they're fun and they feel authentic and it's I like it a lot. Yeah.
And I try to throw in like over the holidays, I threw in stuff that it got good feedback. It's a small little channel. It's nothing that, I really intended on being any more than just, it's fun for me, but I love doing the thing with Snows and breaking in. I told Clay, I have this idea. I want to, and I don't know what their true thoughts are, but Brendan was kind of pumping me up. Yeah, I'll do it with you. We're gonna steal Tootsie's book and her cookbook or her process and we've done a couple others that
the one with Roy was great.
Yeah, Roy was
I'll put
like
links to all those.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Roy is just one of those guys, he's my hero. And I'll give Clay at Snow's, Clay Coggill a plug. He's the one that told me, he's like, man, dude, if you Google Pitmaster, the first guy that comes up is you know, it's Roy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. And Roy Perez is, to me, gets me excited. Every time I've gone in there, I went in there a couple summers ago and opened the door and I saw him and I was like, I thought I saw Elvis. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, that's how it felt. Or I saw,
well, he's an icon.
You see Wayne Miller, when you see Sam Jones, when you see these guys, like, when they've perfected their craft, they know what they're doing. And it's kind of like second nature. And everybody in the backyard scene is sweating on a weekend to hope their food turns out okay 10 hours later for their guest or for their family. And these guys are like, you know,
they've been doing
we got
it.
This.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, it's a, and it's a job that's become, it's second nature to them.
Right. The repetition. So it's, right. It is.
Yeah, no, it's really, really cool. And I just to wrap this up, is there anything that we have missed?
No, I love barbecue, and I'm really happy to see the growth of Central Texas barbecue grow across the country. I'm really want to be a part of it, and it's really important for me to also state that I like Eastern Carolina barbecue, and I love cooking with, you know, I love the brick pits, and I love, you know, the risk with it. I saw Sam Jones post the other day that Skylight had some flames get up under the roof, I guess, and I just love the whole culture of barbecue, as you do.
And fire.
By the way, your podcast is on fire. Every time I see you have a new guest, I'm like going, what's the superstar? And then I'll watch that one here in a little bit. We'll put it on the shop. And then the next one, it's a superstar. So I've got like,
thank you. Well, have more, like I have more to edit, but I love it. And I'm humbled that these people want to
you
talk
do a good
me.
Job.
Thank you.
I watched, I guess it's been a year and a half, I guess. I don't know. For the first time I saw, and I like your approach that it's kind of, what's the guy's name? He has a bad rap now, but, Charlie Rose. I felt like
he's my idol in this respect.
Charlie Rose of barbecue.
There you go. No, that's who until he had his little allegations, I felt like I loved his style and I loved his conversation. I want it to be a conversation. That's my whole
goal. I'm not good at interviewing. I want to do it. Matter of fact, one of the funniest moments was interviewing Daniel Vaughn, and he's like telling me I'm interviewing the interviewer, and he's like, no, dude, let me answer the question.
Oh, that's so funny.
So
that's
I'm trying to learn how to.
Daniel was actually my second interview for this, and I've known him forever, and I was like deep down inside, I was nervous, but then after like 5 minutes, he's such a master at
that. Man, that guy knows more, and it's not because he's kind of playing the part. He really knows from the slaughtering an animal to cooking an animal and everybody in between that does it.
And always learning.
And that's why he's the editor of, you know, a magazine for barbecue.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's interesting. I watched his journey from blogger to this. It's exciting. But
I followed his blog, and that was so interesting because I lost touch when his blog went away. I had no idea he really, you know, had gone to Texas Monthly to do barbecue.
Oh, interesting.
I missed it. I thought he was going to do some other editorial, and then a few months later, I saw, he's doing barbecue.
Yeah,
and
good for him. I'm so happy for him.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see this list. I mean, a lot of people outside of Texas don't understand that this top 50 list is – it kind of pushes the needle for barbecue all over. But I'm excited. I've actually just over the holidays wrote down my top five, and I've gotten through the state. I was in the state more times than most people outside of it. You know, a lot of time in Texas delivering pits. And, man, I've got some spots that I ate at that I was like, wow.
It's going to be – I was thinking about that a couple nights ago. Like, this list that's coming out is going to be very interesting. It's a couple years away, but still.
Maybe sometime I'll get you on a Q-Torals, and we'll talk about all the outsiders list. There's so many lists now that are popping up. And
That'd be a fun one.
You know, there's some definitely – I've had some barbecue, even in some big open all-day restaurants that – I mean, this is good. But, man, I really appreciate it.
Thank you, JD. Thanks. I'm glad we got this technology working out.
Yeah. Well, at least for now, I didn't get it all worked out. Yeah. And, man, keep up the good work.
Thank you. You as well. I'm excited to meet you in person.
Yeah, same here.